Hello, thanks for staying for the very end. Okay, today I'm going to talk to you about a project in my lab that has to do with changing the oil profile. Okay, and we're going to talk about soybeans. Many of you might not realize the impact that soybean has on your daily caloric intake. And that's because although soybean is a commodity crop and we know it's grown a lot, as a high-protein meal and as an oil seed, most people don't realize that because oil is so calorie-dense that many of our, at least the typical American diet's calories, come from oil. And in that case, here in America, that oil has been soybean oil. So this makes up a big part of our diet without us really knowing it. And I'm going to talk today about kind of a nutritional change in soybean oil that could help enhance human health, mostly in developing countries where we have an excess of calories usually. Sorry, non-developing. I think I said that wrong. Anyway, I thought we'd been pretty serious today, so I'm sorry if the beating heart offends you, but what I want to say here is that, and I can probably use the mouse, the research objective here is to create a more functional oil. So soybean oil on its own is actually pretty good. But for reasons that I'm not going to go into detail, it's not the most functional oil that we have. And so what we would like to do is improve the properties of the oil by creating a high oleic acid trait. So if we look down here at the bottom, this is supposed to represent a typical commodity soybean, which when the oil is extracted consists primarily of 5 fatty acids, and those are listed here. And you may know, if you've heard any health things lately, that saturated fats, which are principally in soybean, palmitic and stearic acids, tend to have a negative association with your heart health. Additionally, the polyunsaturated fatty acids, linoleic and linolenic, although technically are good for you, are associated with some functional properties of soybean oil that make them negative for the oil to be used most extensively. So although PUFAs are omega-3s in some cases, they aren't functional in most of our foods. And so the objective here then is to take the one remaining fatty acid, oleic acid, and essentially try to decrease the things that are not as functional, so the saturated fats and the PUFAs, and replace it with this monounsaturated fat. And the profile that I'm showing here is actually a high oleic acid soybean profile, but if you think about other oils that are functional and high value, the most similar one would probably be olive oil to what the target is here. And so you can imagine that if we had a commodity oil with a profile of olive oil, that really might change our food. Okay, I am going to talk some molecular biology here, which we haven't had a whole lot of. So our strategy was first to look through the germplasm collection and see if there was variation that would include a high oleic acid trait, and there was not. And so then, because we knew a fair thing about soybean and its genome, what we decided was if we could combine variant alleles at the 2 loci that we thought were critical for oleic acid desaturation, then it was likely that we could create the trait. And so although it didn't exist naturally, we had an idea that we could still make it by taking some information from model organisms and things that we already knew that were happening in soybean. And so in this little cartoon, these little globs are supposed to represent the FAD2, or fatty acid desaturase 2, enzyme activity. And this enzyme desaturates oleic acid on phosphatidylcholine to linoleic acid on phosphatidylcholine. And the FAD2 enzymes have been shown in other organisms to be associated with the endoplasmic reticulum. And so we're talking about things that happen in the seeds but are not chloroplast targeted. In soybean, we have 2 seed-specific, I would say, expressed enzymes that we call FAD21A and FAD21B. And these were our candidate genes for their study. Even though we knew that there were other FAD2s and likely many FAD6s also present, our focus was just really on these 2 genes. Okay, and I have 2 slides talking about the sources of mutations that we had for each of the FAD2-1 genes. And this one is for FAD2-1A. We had access to a Japanese line that had a deletion of the entire FAD2-1A gene. That was induced by X-ray mutagenesis. In addition, I was part of a reverse genetics project where we identified a line that we call 17D that has a missense mutation in the FAD2-1A gene, and this causes a serine to asparagine change, and that was induced by EMS mutagenesis, and as I said, it was identified in a reverse genetic screen. And this is a web logo of the a portion of the FAD2-1A amino acid sequence, such that I'm showing positions 104 to 123 in the amino acid. And what I'm showing here is a visual way to represent the conservation of a particular amino acid at each position within the enzyme. And so, for instance, at this position, the large letter A and the small letter G would represent the fact that in an alignment of over 100 different FAD2-1A enzymes, the predominant amino acid at this position was alanine, and some of the time it was glycine. And so when you have a sort of the largest letter with nothing underneath it, you could say that position is invariant. And this missense mutation in 17D happened at position 117, and although there were some other amino acids that were present in some cases, they were never this asparagine. And so you could say that this missense mutation is likely to be deleterious to the enzyme's function. Okay. I think this is the last molecular biology. FAD21B, we also, as part of this project, identified two new sources of mutant alleles. These came out of our PI collection, or our plant introduction collection from the Germplasm Center. And this particular PI that we identified had a proline at position 137 to arginine missense mutation, and we just abbreviate that like that. This again is a web logo description, and although I'm showing both of these changes here, of course, each line only had one of those changes. So this is the proline. You can see it is invariant, and so this change is also likely damaging. In this other PI, it had an isoleucine to threonine missense mutation at this position, and you can see that the isoleucine is not even the most predominant amino acid at that position. So although we knew this was possibly an important change, we weren't sure of how important it would really be. Nevertheless, this is what we had to work with. Okay, and in this slide, I just wanted to summarize the things that we knew at the time, and so I've just sort of gathered up some data on the oleic acid content of either wild type lines with mutant A genes or lines with mutant B genes. And I should also mention that oleic acid accumulation seems to be heavily influenced by the environment in which the seeds develop, so that temperature has a big effect on the accumulation of oleic acid. And actually, for many years, this has really confounded studies of the genetic basis of elevated oleic acid materials, because it seems like the phenotype is hard to pin down. So anyway, what you can see here is that oleic acid content is relatively low. 20 to 30% would be fairly typical in wild-type lines that have functional FAD21A and FAD21B genes. And then if you make a mutation in either the A genes or the B genes, then you get some elevation of oleic acid. But our target here is above 70% oleic acid, and so clearly we're not quite achieving that here. So once we had gathered these materials, you could see that it became pretty obvious that what we wanted to do was combine mutant alleles in all different combinations and see what happened. And this is a graph to describe what did happen when we took across. We looked at recombinant inbred lines that were derived from a cross that had the deletion of the FAD21A gene and the most severe missense mutation of the FAD21B gene. On this axis, I'm showing the oleic acid content, essentially as the percent of total fatty acids. And through here, I'm showing a wild-type control, the two parents used in the cross, and then the outcome separated by genotype of the progeny that, in this case, were recombinant inbred lines. And so we recovered both wild-type oleic acid phenotypes, both parents, and then we got this really stupendous transgenic segregation of over 80% oleic acid in these seeds. So this was material grown in southeast Missouri. Similarly, we looked at what happened when we took the deletion of FAD21A and combined it with that missense mutation that we're kind of unsure about from FAD21B. The setup is the same here with oleic acid here. The parents, a control. This time we're using a different PI as the parent. But the results are very similar. So we recover wild type, both parent phenotypes, and then 80% oleic acid in the seeds of the mutant. So this nomenclature is uppercase for wild type, lowercase for mutant alleles. And so the double homozygous mutant has the phenotype that we really like. I also mentioned that we were curious about this FAD21A missense mutation. Actually, in field trials previously, this mutation alone sometimes would disappear in terms of the fatty acid content of oleic acid wasn't always as distinguishable from wild type as we would have liked to see. But when we combined it with the FAD21B more severe mutant allele, sort of the same thing happened. Again, we have a wild type control, two parents. In this case, the FAD21B parent was one of the RILs from the previous populations. And we again saw recovery of a wild type phenotype. One of the parents did not seem to come out in the, and these are F3 seeds, but we did recover the other parent and we approached 80% oleic acid. So this time we dropped oleic just a little bit, but standard deviations are always quite low when we have high oleic going on, and we're still exploring why that is, but it's one of the sort of happy features of this is that standard deviations are low. So the seed range of oleic acid is actually quite low. One of the things that is questionable, I think, is how stable is this trait in different environments, particularly because we know the temperature during seed fill seems to be really important. So we were able to look at just the homozygous combinations of the three previous slides that I showed you in three different environments. So we have Costa Rica, a very warm environment, Portageville, Missouri, what I consider still pretty warm, and then as far north as the plants would grow, given their maturity, was Columbia, Missouri, and we did have a little trouble with frost here. But what I've highlighted in red was the instability, and that was the combination of the FAD21A deletion allele along with that questionable FAD21B allele. So although it looked really good in Costa Rica, once we brought it to where the temperatures were cooler, that oleic acid content really dropped off and the variability went up, so it did not seem particularly stable. However, both of the strong, what I would call strong missense alleles of FAD21B combined either with the deletion or the missense mutation of FAD21A were fairly stable with small standard deviations no matter which environment that we grew them in. So I'd just like to conclude then that it seemed to us that we could say with some certainty that the deletion of allele of FAD21A and the missense allele both pretty likely damage. Well, certainly the first one is a null allele, but this one appears to be pretty damaging as well. They combined with this severe allele of FAD21B to produce a high oleic acid phenotype. And this has been reproduced in more environments, although I don't really have time to go through that data today, but all of those are southern environments because we don't have the maturity set yet for northern environments. So, just to sum up, what we found is that we could create the phenotype that we wanted, which had been predicted by transgenic studies, and that is that combinations of mutations in our two candidate genes, just FAD21A and FAD21B, create a high oleic acid soybean, and this is, of course, conventional. And that will just provide an opportunity for growers or regions of sale that maybe won't accept for now the transgenic products. So mutations in just two genes seem to elevate the oleic acid level 4 to 5-fold. We have markers for these two genes, and hopefully breeding will be pretty quick. And with that, I'd just like to acknowledge my co-authors, Grover Shannon, the plant breeder, Jung Dong Lee, his assistant, who's now a professor in Korea, and a PhD student whose project this was, Ayn Pham. With that, thank you for your attention.
We have time for questions. Ken?
We don't have the materials to look at yield yet. We did look at oil and protein content, and there were no negative consequences with oil and protein among the different recombinations of the genes. But we of course want to do yield trials as soon as we can get enough seeds.
I can't remember, you said at the beginning or from previous talks you've given, are those seed specific? Are those genes expressed only in seeds, or are they expressed in the vegetative tissues? And if so, is there any pleiotropic effects with this?
They are supposed to be seed specific, and the soybean genome has undergone enough duplication that it seems like there might be a specialization for a number of genes to be seed specific, so that's not really all that surprising. And no, we don't see any pleiotropic effects at this point.
Would you like to evaluate your material in earlier maturity?
Yeah, I made those crosses. But, you know, it just takes a few generations to sort that all out. Thank you.
Thank you.